27th chapter of Acts. We're coming down toward the end here. And this is a difficult chapter as far as breaking it down into sections and trying to preach topics through it. It's pretty well one running story all the way through here about the experience that Paul had and those that were accompanying with him on his voyage to Rome after he was after he left Caesarea Philippi. Luke wrote the book, you know, of Acts. You're familiar with that. And is clearly still traveling with Paul, as you see in this 27th chapter here. You see that in the pronouns that he uses as the writer here. For example, in the verse number 1, he uses the pronoun our. That includes him with Paul and those that are traveling with him. And then in we find we and us in verse number 2. We again in verse number 3 and 4, we see the same thing. And then you go on through the entire chapter, 44 verses, and you'll pick it up. He's just traveling along with Paul, writing the inspired word of the 27th chapter as they go through this terrible experience they had with the shipwreck on the sea. This is an awful storm. I've never read anything like it. I don't imagine anything like it. They went 14 days without being able to see the stars or the sun. That was how dark it was, how dark the storm was. And you'll see that as we travel through it. Now, I tried to put this thing together tonight as a kind of a novel type story. And so I hope it comes out where it'd be interesting to you and also instructive and encouraging. Starting in verse number 1 is Luke's writing. He says, as soon as arrangements were complete for our sailing to Italy, Paul and a few other prisoners were placed under supervision of a centurion by the name of Julius, who was a member of the elite guard, the Italian band. And this fellow, almost instantly, Paul finds favor with this guy, this centurion. He was put in charge of getting Paul to Rome. Paul, you know, had determined to stand before Caesar, and that put him out of the hands of those Jews that were constantly trying to find a way to kill him. We went through all that, you know. I mean, they never let up. But now he's free from them. He's under the care of this particular fellow named Julius, and he's on his way to Rome, and they're not aboard ship. He's by himself with his comrades, Luke and a couple of others, as we'll pick up down through here. It says, we boarded a ship from Adramidium that was bound for Ephesus and ports on the western coast, and says that Aristarchus. Now, what? Look at this. Aristarchus, if you've read much in the, especially in the letters of Paul, his name comes up in Colossians chapter 4. He was from Thessalonica. And in the providence of God, he's here at this particular place where Paul launches from, where Paul and those aboard this particular ship launches from. And it's kind of a mysterious thing. Your scripture tell you he's a Macedonian from Thessalonica. And Luke says he went with us. For some reason or other, he boarded that ship. Well, if you go to the 4th chapter of Colossians, Paul mentions Aristarchus, and as he's writing, that's one of the prison letters. You know, he wrote 4 letters from the prison in Rome. and Ephesians, Galatians, and Colossians, and Philippians, I think, was the other one that he wrote from that prison. And as he writes to the Colossians, he says, by the way, said Aristarchus sends you greetings, my fellow prisoner. I don't think he was a prisoner at this time, but some way or another, he got caught in this thing and became a prisoner with Paul in the Roman prison. And so that was interesting. And then Luke says, the next day we put in at Sidon, Judas, who treated Paul most kindly, that is very decently, let him off the ship that he might spend some time in fellowship with some of the believers that were in Sidon. You see, Paul had been all over that part of the world preaching, and he knew believers. He knew believers from one end of Asia to the other. He traveled it so much and establishing all those churches. Now they were scattered also. The believers from various churches, various areas where he had preached the gospel. So he knew people. And undoubtedly, he mentioned that to Judas, and Judas said, well, Paul, take your leave. And just you go ashore and spend some time with your friends. And that was a very encouraging thing for him. Very encouraging. I remember Brother Henry Mahan talking about this one time years ago. He made the statements when he was pastoring back in, I guess the 80s or 90s. I remember him making a statement that he knew so many people, and he did, across the United States. That he'd preached from one end of this country to the other. He said, if I wanted to, I could probably start out from Ashland, Kentucky, and on a trip to California, and not have to spend a penny or a night in a motel or a hotel, knowing so many people, arranging his trip, mapping that thing out to where. He said, I have folks that would take me in for lodging just about all the way across this country. And I thought about him when I thought about Paul here. And that was Paul. He knew them all up and down those coasts where he had preached the gospel. And they were glad to have Paul to come by and spend some time with them in fellowship around the gospel. Luke goes on and says, To see again, we sail north under the protection of the northeast shore of Cyprus, because winds out of the west were against us. And then along the coast westward to Myra, the port at Myra. They docked there for a time and to take on supplies, I suppose. And said there the centurion found an Egyptian ship headed for Italy. And he transferred all of us aboard that Egyptian ship. So they changed ship in Myra. And it says, he goes on writing, he says, we ran into bad weather and found it impossible to stay on course. After much difficulty, we finally made it to the southern coast of the island of Crete and docked at Good Harbor. Docked at Good Harbor, and the writer said, which was an appropriate name. And Luke goes on and says, by this time, we had lost a lot of time. Yeah, I put in a note here, because I know what's going to take place ahead. He said, we'd lost a lot of time, but a little time, I thought, lost here is not worth sacrificing for the great time they're going to lose later on. Their journey is going to be very difficult when that storm hits them. And he said we had passed the autumn equinox, so it would be stormy weather from now on through the winter. Too dangerous for sailing. But they've done passed up a couple of places that would have been a fair place to lodge. Sometimes I've been in such a hurry. Of course, this wasn't Paul. This was the shipmaster that was trying to get this. This was a grain ship, was taking a load of grain to Rome. And probably he had a schedule that he was trying to keep. And he took a lot of chances, and of course, finally, the chances that he took was the demise of the ship. And but anyway, he says he goes on and says it was this equinox, and I looked up this thing. This is the first point of what they call a Libra, and about the 23rd of September in the early fall. Making the day at this time, that's why I called it equinox. It made the day and the night of equal time. You had just as much daylight as you had night time. And then you have another equinox, it said in March. It did the same thing. It was the situation of the sun with the earth. It caused this. Those mariners, those ship people, in those days knew these things very well, but Paul knew something about it also. Paul knew something about this. Undoubtedly, he was a very intelligent fellow. He studied many things. That reminded me of Brother E.W. Johnson, smartest fellow I think I ever knew. Brother Johnson, just because he was never satisfied with not occupying his mind, he studied everything imaginable outside the Bible. I mean, when he was 72 years old, he decided he wanted to learn to play the organ, so he got him a correspondent book and sat down at the organ in the church out there at Pine Bluff and taught himself to play the organ. That was just kind of fellow he was. He was wanting to learn things all the time. And I just imagine Paul was the same way. But at this time, Paul warned the shipmaster. And the owner of the ship was aboard also. He warned both of them that it wouldn't be wise to sail during this difficult period of time. And he said, "I see disaster, only disaster, ahead for the cargo and the ship." He said, "to say nothing of our lives if we put out to sea now." He's trying to give them some advice here. But you know, the shipmaster and the owner himself, you know, they figured they had a lot more knowledge about this matter of sailing than Paul did. So they just sort of set that aside and refused to pay attention to him. So a question came to my mind. Whose advice seems the better? The experienced man or the man that walks with God? Now, Paul had insight that these fellows didn't know anything about. He knew that what was ahead of him because God in his moving in Paul's heart undoubtedly was teaching him some things that would have been very valuable for these fellows to listen to. He knew some things. Things that just was sensitive to him. But anyway, it never dawned on these fellows to pay attention to him. You know, Enoch walked with God and was delivered from the coming disaster of the world. But Luke's referring to the harbor, good harbor. He says, but it was not the best harbor for staying the winter. So they wanted to get to another place called Phoenix, a few miles further on up the coast. And which to them, that is the shipmaster, seemed to be a more suitable place if they're going to have to dock and dock there for the winter. But anyway, he goes on saying, when a gentle southerly breeze came up, they weighed anchor, that is, they lifted the anchor of the ship, and thinking it would be a smooth sailing because of this temporary southerly wind that was blowing real lightly and smoothly. But they were no sooner, Luke says, out to sea than a gale force wind. The infamous, what they call the nor'easter, struck. That's a terrible wind. That's a terrible storm. We still have those things, especially up the Atlantic coast. And you'll hear the weather people occasionally make reference to it on up into New England, places like that. But anyway, it's a fierce wind. And the captain had attempted to cross the open bay there from the Fair Havens to Phoenix, each on the southern side of Crete. But when halfway across, the wind changed. It seemed to be a sudden squall struck down from the mountains and hit the ship. And all of a sudden, that big ship was just driven out to sea. And they could not control it. It was out of control. They had to drop sails and let the ship just float. And someone said it was like a cork in the storm, just bobbling around on the waters. Luke says we came under the lee. That is the lee. That's the word that means a calm, sheltered place, defended by from the wind. He says we come under the lee of the small island named Clauda, and managed to get a lifeboat ready and reef the sails. But rocky shoals along that particular coast prevented us from getting close. We only managed to avoid them by throwing out drift anchors. And Luke says the very next day, out on the high seas again, we're floating. We're out to sea in the midst of this storm. And the storm's getting worse every day. And says, and badly damaged now, hitting some of those rocks along the shore there by the storm. And they said, we dumped the cargo overboard, got rid of all, there went the corn. It was the valuable cargo of the ship they were trying to get to Rome. And said the third day, the sailors lightened the ship further by throwing off all the tackle and provisions. All the provisions were thrown over. It had been many days, Luke says, since we had seen either sun or stars. Wind and waves were battering us unmercifully, and we lost all hope of rescue. So here they are. Yeah. You ever been there? This situation where it seems like there's no hope? Well, here's the great Apostle Paul and his friends. It appears that there's no hope. They're just floating around under the mercy of God. He says, with our appetite for both food and life long gone, Paul took his place in our midst. That is, he came and stood in the midst of them and said, friends, you really should have listened to me. You ever had anybody tell you that after you got in trouble? I told you so. You would pay no attention to me. And we all probably experienced with that, aren't we? A lot of things I went through growing up as a boy, you know, if I'd paid attention, I would avoid a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. But, you know, we like to think we can do it on our own. But anyway, he said, you really should have listened to me back in Crete. He said, we could have avoided all this trouble and this trial we're in now. But he says, now the apostle has opportunity to preach, to preach his faith in the true and living God. And this is, I think this is the main thing about this chapter here and about this whole experience that Paul's having, this episode of being caught out at sea in this terrible storm with these 276 men on board this ship. And he has an opportunity now to talk to them about a God that he's been serving and living for and walking with that controls all things. So his message now is a sovereign God who's in control of our destination. And so that's what he's able to testify of. But there's no need, he says, to dwell on that, on the past, that is, our mistakes. He says, from now on, things are looking up. I can assure you, now this is it, I can assure you that there'll not be a single drowning among us. Although I can't say as much for the ship. He said, the ship itself is doomed. But the souls on this ship, 276, not a hair of the head's going to be touched. Not a scratch will be on them. He says, last night, these fellows didn't know that till now. He said, last night, God's angel stood by my side. An angel of this God that I serve, this sovereign God, saying to me, don't give up, Paul. You're going to stand before Caesar. Wasn't that the story from all the way from Jerusalem to now? Well, there's anything going to prevent that now. God told him that way back over here in Acts, what, chapter 21, 22 we read? Well, he's encouraging him and reaffirming. He said, you're going to stand before Caesar yet. And everyone sailing with you is also going to make it. So, dear friends, Paul says, take heart. I believe God. I wish I had that kind of faith. Wouldn't make no difference what the situation is, circumstances. I could just rest and say, well, I believe God. We'll rest in Him. So he says, I believe God will do exactly what He told me. But we're going to shipwreck on some island or another. On the 14th night, adrift somewhere, he says, Luke says, on the Adriatic Sea, at about midnight, he said, the sailors sensed that we were approaching land. So they began to sound. And this word sound here has the idea of measuring the depth of the water as to where they were. And this was a common use of a line with measurements on it in those days on sail ships, where they would throw out a line, and first line they threw out, the first measurement they had was 120 feet to the bottom of the sea. And so they moved a little further in toward that island, and all of a sudden they sounded again throughout the line, and it was another measurement given to them, 90 feet from the hull of the ship to the bottom of the sea. And so they thought they were in pretty good shape about now. But afraid that, Luke says that we were about to run aground, they threw out four anchors and prayed for daylight. Some of the sailors tried to jump ship. They let down the lifeboat, pretending they was going up to the bow of the ship and set some anchors out in order to hold the ship. Paul had to remind the centurion. Paul said, saw through the guise of these fellows, these sailors, and he told the centurion and his soldiers, he says, remember what I said, if these sailors don't stay on the ship as God directed us, he says, we're all going down. And so now Judas believes what the man says. And he's got confidence in him, so the soldiers cut the lines at the orders of Judas, the centurion. They cut the lines of that lifeboat that they were letting down to try to escape, is what they were going to do, and just let it go adrift. You know, Paul might have said, believe me, you're going to come out of this without even a scratch. What was Paul doing through this whole episode here? What do we see here? But preaching his faith in his God. His faith in a God that these mariners knew absolutely nothing about. What an opportunity he had here to glorify God. You know, and there again, that's us. We never know when we're going to get into a situation, circumstances, where we can manifest our faith, what we believe, how much we believe in the God that we say we believe in. And God may put us in those difficult situations sometimes that the world might, or our friends might just see something in us that they don't have in themselves. None of these sailors had that. They served all kind of a plurality of gods, but Paul served the living and true God who was controlling all things, all the circumstances. And that's what he wanted to get across to these guys. And so with dawn about to break, Paul called every one of these fellows together and proposed a break fast. That's what we call breakfast. They hadn't eaten 14 days. They hadn't want anything to eat. They were in the midst of a storm. Appetite was gone. They weren't hungry. They were trying to. They were fighting for their lives. But he ordered a break. Proposed a breakfast, and this is the 14th day. He says, "We've gone without food. None of us has felt like eating. But I urge you to eat something now. You'll need strength for the rescue that's ahead." So he broke bread. He broke bread first, and then passed the bread around, and they began to eat and fill themselves, that they might have strength for what was ahead. And it says, with the meal finished and everyone full, the ship was further lightened by dumping the grain overboard. At daybreak, no one recognized the land. But then they did notice a bay with a nice beach, and they decided to try to run the ship up on the beach. And so they cut the anchors, loosed the tiller, raised the sail, and ran before the wind toward the beach. But the trial wasn't over. It wasn't over. The soldiers, Luke writes about it. He says, "But we didn't make it. Still far from shore, we hit a reef, and the ship began to break up in pieces. And the soldiers decided to kill the prisoners so none could escape by swimming. But here providence intervenes. God's purpose is going to be accomplished. And so again, Paul is saved by the providence of God. But the centurion, Julius, determined to save Paul. He was interested, not in anyone else but Paul, determined to save Paul, one of the prisoners. So he stopped them. He gave orders for anyone who could swim to dive off the ship, it was breaking up, and go for the beach, go for the shore. And for the rest, he says, grab a plank or anything that's broken up and float into shore. So everyone made it. Everyone, 176 of them, made it to shore without any damage whatsoever. So just like Paul, as he said his God had revealed this thing to him, you know, who you think got the glory out of all this? You think they were praising Paul? I think somebody was thinking about Paul's God. What a testimony. What a living reality and testimony that this man left for these 276 sailors and mariners and soldiers and what have you as they reached shore. You know, at every stage of this voyage, the apostle seemed to have bent all his endeavors to use the opportunities that God gave him to preach, to declare, to testify his God and his faith in him, what this God had done for him that he was serving. And so we can see truly Paul, who made this statement, he said, "For me to live is Christ." That's all he lived for, is Christ. And I thought about this. I would to God that was so with all of us. Just to live is Christ. Just to live is Christ. How much better off would we be, and how much better off would those around us be if they could see that living reality in each and every one of us? I hope that was interesting to you, the way I put it. May the Lord continue to bless. Of course, we've got an experience now on this island that they come ashore to, with these primitives. None of them knew God either. But he had an opportunity again to preach and testify his faith in God. All right.